You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid, I'll rise up. And I'll do it a thousand times again. And I'll rise up, I like the waves. I'll rise up, in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet. Move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. With you, with you, with you, with you. And for that we have each other. I will rise a thousand times again, and we'll rise up. I like the waves. We'll rise up in spite of the ache. We'll rise up, and we'll do it a thousand times again. You.
To recover.
Yeah, we can make it work. We just even can make it work every time.
We're gonna inundate you with
so
beautiful music.
So we better get up, stand up for your eyes. Or someone would say we're coming in from the cold. Or another one would say sun is shining.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
This is Recovery Radio, and I am your host, James Boyd. That is such a hauntingly beautiful song, "Rise Up" by Andrea Day. That is such a beautiful song. It's good to wake up to with feelings of joy and strength and courage. And I believe that Rise Up, she sings so beautifully. Don't you agree? My name is James Boyd, and you're listening to another session of Recovery Radio. And the topic this morning on Recovery Radio is words matter. Words matter, and we want to try and address the stigma that is associated with words, the phraseology that we use. Our eloquence should be enhanced. We should use different phrases when we speak to people about substance abuse and about how we separate one another through words. We stigmatize. And so we want to talk about mental health and stigmatization as well this morning on Recovery Radio. If you'd like to call in and if you're listening live, you can call in at 304-885-0708, or you can email me at boydbw at msn.com. That's boydbw at msn.com. And let us know here on Recovery Radio your thoughts and how you feel, or if you've ever been impacted or stigmatized. And, you know, there's so many different sides to the same coin, because I find in the recovery community, my experience, that sometimes the stigmatized becomes the stigmatizer. And we're going to open that up. I have a caller who will be joining us this morning. He's a resident of Virginia. I think he's down in the Frederick area. However, his business operation is in Martinsburg, Berkeley County, and he's a healthcare provider. I want to talk about the community deliberative dialogue here on Recovery Radio this morning. I have some really, really good information that I received from Dr. John Aldis, and it's just a questionnaire that we're going to be discussing this morning, and to get the feedback that will help us move in the direction that we need to move in to offer the best help, the best treatment that people can get. And it's going to be, we're going to be addressing opioid addiction and meeting the opioid epidemic at the state level. You know, this has the epidemic, all of the stigma and the overdose deaths, and it has taken on epic proportions, and we need to address it. We need to attack it in that way, and we need to be collaborative. We need to be systematic, and we need to be true to the cause. In many cases, that is not happening, and so we're getting subterranean treatment. So I'm going to be asking my caller some questions, but in the meantime, let me ask you, how do you feel if we, on the state level, would begin to dispense naloxone kits, preferably Narcan, with appropriate training upon discharge from a ward or emergency department to patients who are in treatment for overdose? To patients who are in treatment for overdose, dispensing naloxone kits and training people, teaching people to be, to self-care. We need to educate those who are involved in substance abuse, and those who are, family members, children, because this touches everybody. And I believe that this dossier that the good doctor provided me with is an excellent start in the right direction in finding out who knows what and what is the training that we need to provide, and also if a person actually wants to stop using substance. So we're talking about medically assisted treatment in a lot of cases. And question two is, would we or should we allow hospital emergency departments to offer a 3-day? So my caller is actually calling the wrong number right now on my phone. And so if he doesn't call back into the radio station, then we won't be having him. And so maybe we can just talk between you and I, because I believe that we can spend many, many, many hours just discussing this good list of things, of options that my good friend Dr. John Aldous provided. And I'm just going to go down the list and read the questions, and if you'd like to respond, you can just call me and talk to me about what it is and how you feel. So
you got the right number there, right? 304-885-0708.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting now.
Yeah, we're waiting now. So, okay, Wendell Smith is the caller that's actually calling the right number. Sometimes we get so busy as care providers that we make a lot of mistakes. We miss a lot of opportunities to provide personal and professional health care because we're inundated. There's not actually enough people who are really, really engaged in the process. So question two was, allow hospital emergency departments to offer a 3-day supply of Suboxone, the first dose administered in the hospital before discharge, along with referral to a treatment facility. And I was hoping that my caller, who actually runs a treatment facility, to come in, to call in and talk to us about what it is that he provides. And, you know, most importantly, if what he provides can be adjusted or upgraded, you know, with no harm to people who are looking for service. But you gotta agree with me when I say that some of the treatment facilities are certainly misinformed on a lot of cases. And I don't know why that is, but that seems to be the case. And here on Recovery Radio, we would like to provide you with the best information that we can come across and hopefully get your input in allowing you to respond to what it is that we're suggesting in a way that, you know, that helps you to be able to be a best provider. I think my caller is ringing us right now, and so we're going to go to him. I'm kind of excited.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wendell. How are you? Welcome to Recovery Radio this morning. Of course, you know, this is, I noticed you were dialing the wrong number at one point. And so
I
you
noticed were, that.
Yes,
that was,
yes, yes. That's okay. No harm, no foul. You know, we're good. But thank you for calling in and taking the time to visit with us this morning. And so I was going over the topic, which is, stop the stigma. Words do matter. The words that you use do matter. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to go ahead and introduce yourself to my listening audience and tell us what it is that you do.
Good morning, audience. I'm D. Wendell Smith. I am the director of an organization called Transitional Training Services. We are located in downtown Martinsburg on North Queen Street. We're also connected with the Center, Inc. These two organizations work in conjunction with each other. I am a mental health, I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker, first of all. And I work with people who have mental health issues and people who've been traumatized. And we see trauma as not only abuse, but we're talking about domestic violence, victims of domestic violence. We're talking about homelessness, drug addiction and recovery. All of those, alcoholism, all of those things are traumatic experiences. And
how so is that? All of those experiences that you just named are traumatic experiences. Help us laymen to understand what you mean by that.
Trauma is something that occurs in your life that takes you out of the realm of normal day-to-day activities that you may have been involved in. It may be, and it is often, trauma is often a life-threatening event. Or you witness somebody who goes through a life-threatening event. For example, children who are going through homelessness with their parents as a family. That's traumatic for the children and the family. Or say a young lady sees her mother being abused or victimized, victim of domestic violence. That young lady has been traumatized because it incapacitates you to a certain degree. So that's the way we best describe and look at trauma.
Okay, if you would like to respond to Mr. Smith's comments, or just have a question for him, you can call me here on Recovery Radio at 304-885-0708. So Mr. Smith, go on and tell us where you're located. Give us a physical address. If someone wanted to contact you, how would we do it?
My office is at 142 North Queen Street in Martinsburg. The number that's most accessible for people to reach me is 240-626-6849. As I said, transitional training, the modus operandi, the way we operate with transitional training, is helping people transition from a life-changing event into some form of everyday normalcy, as far as that goes. For example, if someone becomes drug addicted, for example, and they want to break that cycle, once they've broken the cycle and gotten help and gone through rehab, then after you've gone through rehab, after you've come out of homelessness, after you've gotten away from the domestic violence situation, after you've gotten away from that sexual abuse situation of the child, how do you move forward? How do you take a next step? Because every morning, Mr. Boyd, I understand that when someone is addicted to drugs, when they wake up in the morning, their thought process is, how can I get to my next fix? What do I need to do to get my next high or my next package or whatever the case may be. With someone going through domestic violence, they wake up and they wonder, will it happen again today? How can I avoid being hit? How can I avoid being mentally abused? How can I avoid, for homeless people who are waking up and having to leave the shelter, is, well, where am I going to get my next meal? Where am I going to sleep tonight? How am I going to get back to this? So the pattern of thinking becomes, how do I get to the next? And what transitional helps with is teaching you how to, we retrain the endorphins in the brain to teach you how to think outside of that situation.
Well, okay, back up. Let me slow you down a little, because I got a couple of questions. What are endorphins?
Endorphins are those brain cells that we have that are the center of our emotions. In other words, the endorphins tell you to be happy. The endorphins tell you to enjoy this. Endorphins are the center of the thinking process, as it were. And it triggers happiness. It triggers joy. It triggers determination. It triggers everything that we do. Mm-hmm. So it's retraining the endorphins to be functional, to be more functional.
Mm-hmm. And so that sounds sort of medical to me. You provide medical health? It sounds medical
it's
to
not
me.
It's not medical. Mm-hmm. It's actually mental.
Mm-hmm.
It is more, it's a mental health process and increasing a better way to think, mm-hmm. a clearer way to think. And after we come through transitional and we help you learn to think differently, see, part of that is people with various mental health issues, they go through some form of mental health therapy. And where they're sitting down and talk with someone about the issues and things like that, and that's well and good. The challenge is, though, to put those things to practice.
Mm-hmm.
to put to practice these theories and things that the therapist may, the psychotherapist may be telling you to do, how to get along with something, how to let go of the past. So transitional helps you activate that and put it and make it practical, I think is what I want to say. And from there, people transition into the center, the Center Inc. And the center, what the center does is hands-on activities, teaching people skills, helping them learn skills. You know, everybody is born a genius, Mr. Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
It's just over the years, the genius disappears because of life events, because of different stigmas, shame and embarrassment that comes with some of the choices that we make. I don't want to get too far afield. You have any other questions?
Yeah, I have lots of other questions, and we probably don't have enough time in this whole month to answer all the questions, but I'm going to try and get to the best ones. Okay, let me ask you how you feel about this. If we were to dispense naloxone kits, tell me, first of all, do you know anything about medically assisted treatment? Is that offered at your establishment? As, you know, the Suboxone and the other one.
I support medically assisted treatment. We don't do it at our office. Like we don't administer Suboxone or some of the other things. But I have clients that work with me that are on medically assisted treatment. I fully support that process.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever individuals need to help them move beyond that addiction and that problem that's bogging them down, I support.
Mm-hmm.
I fully support, and we can talk. And see, part of this, Mr. Boyd, is that this creates, sometimes people are dealing with mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the mental health issues which are diagnosed as, for example, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, and these things. So people are struggling with that. And so in the struggle, it comes back to the stigma, because they feel like they are single. They feel like they've been singled out, that they're different from everybody else. One thing I like to share before you get to your next question, everybody walking around has something they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not alone. You're not the only one with this issue. But society, as it were, makes you think you're the only one. But you're not. You're not. And you're not alone. So go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I feel that way as well. Because the librarian down the street is probably struggling with something, too, with her soft-spoken self and handling her books. Yeah, at least. So my next question is how do you feel about we can assure that people who are already on Suboxone, prescribed and dispensed from the hospital, can get into a treatment program before their Suboxone supply runs out to avoid any gaps in that process? How do you fill in the gaps? I guess when a person comes from the emergency room or the treatment when they are released from the hospital, because Suboxone seems to be one of the barriers, you know, people in the community, the stakeholders, a lot of them reject that idea. They say you're just changing one drug from one drug to another. And how do you find that the people who are your clients who are on Suboxone, how do you find them to be as opposed to someone who is not on medically assisted treatment? Can you give
us?
Well,
I have found the clients that I have that are on Suboxone, the Suboxone serves as a bridge, in my thinking, as a bridge, as it were.
Okay.
Because what happens, the addiction consumes your life.
Mm-hmm.
as an addict. It consumes your life.
Words matter.
And
words matter.
Words matter.
And so we just used a no-no. You know what that was, right?
But see, some of us just can't say no and go cold turkey like that.
Right, I understand.
For example, myself, when I smoked cigarettes 30, 40 years ago, I quit cold turkey. Mm-hmm. But then the next day I would wake up and go to where I threw the cigarettes away and pick them up again, you know, or go someplace and smoke cigarette butts or whatever the case may be. Everybody just can't go cold turkey.
So you were addicted to cigarettes.
It's not advisable.
Yeah, you were addicted to cigarettes.
It's not advisable.
Listen to me. You were addicted to cigarettes because we're talking about stigma and changing words matter, right? And I just heard you say an addict. Now, what other word do you think here on Recovery Radio that we should begin to apply when we reference a person?
Instead of calling someone an addict, I like to say he or she has an addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
It's an addictive personality to where because we have so many issues, Mr. Boyd, we have to understand that sometimes, I like the commercial, that one of the insurance commercials that said, life comes at you fast.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes life comes at us so fast that we can get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And we look for an escape.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be drugs. It may be some other form of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are trying to get away from that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
From that pain. And once we get away from the pain, oftentimes we remember, our memory kicks back in, and we remember the pain. So it may be a song mm-hmm. that reminds us. It may be a smell.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a look. Something reminds us of that pain, and we do anything we possibly can do to avoid that pain.
Okay.
And that may be alcohol. That may be hitting someone, that may be violence, that may be anger, that may be depression. All of these things remind us or help us to avoid the pain. The key to that, though, is all of those things are telling us lies. The alcohol does not take you away from the pain. It just takes it. Your mind goes away from it, but the pain is still there. The mm-hmm. problem is still there.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, what are the keys to helping someone adjust their addictive personality to become addicted to something different?
So that sounds like a lot of hard work on the service provider's part. How do you, what are some of the common personality traits of a person with an addictive personality?
Oh, it runs the gambit. It runs the gambit.
Can you just give us a few examples?
Go ahead.
Can you give us a few examples?
A few examples.
Yeah, of a person.
When we talk about bipolar,
mm-hmm.
A person with a mental health diagnosis of being bipolar, where they are excited about life one time and just excited about day-to-day activities and doing just so busy, and on the other extreme, they get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even get out of bed. So the bipolar or the depressed person
mm-hmm.
who's depressed to the point of where they get so overwhelmed. They get so overwhelmed about life and some of the choices they made, or all the choices that they made, that they just don't want to face life at all.
Mm-hmm.
And these things drive us. They drive them to looking for escapes. How can I get away from this?
Mm-hmm.
How can I get away from this dip, this feeling? How can I get away from the pain? So whatever is available, is it drugs? Is it clinging on to people who mistreat us and abuse us? The addictive personality looks for something to cling on to,
mm-hmm.
and it can be triggered by anything.
Mm-hmm.
A memory, as I said before, a thought, So it just runs the gambit. Okay.
What about the physical and environmental factors that contribute to this? Hold on just a second. Hold on, window.
Who's calling in?
It's John Aldis, Dr.
Aldis. Oh, hi, Dr. Aldis. It's John Case. How are you doing there?
Good morning.
Okay. James is here. Okay, go ahead.
Hey,
okay,
Dr. Aldis, how are you?
I shut off the other speaker.
That's all right. That's all right. So,
give me just a moment. Go
ahead. Yeah. So, Dr. Aldis, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. I'm having a little trouble with the background noise here. Let's see if I can shut that down.
Yes, sir. Can you hold on? Wendell, you there? Still there?
Okay. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah. Okay. So,
how are you doing, Dr. Aldis?
Mm-hmm. I'm doing fine. I just wanted to add that last speaker, the one I evidently accidentally cut off here. He's got a pretty good. He's got his mind pretty well wrapped around this thing.
He's still on the air. He's still on the air, Dr. Aldis. Okay, so you can talk straight to him. Okay.
Yeah. It's all three of us now.
Just
go ahead.
Okay. This isn't working right.
It's all right. You good? Go ahead. Go ahead.
I wanted to just say that he has a good idea of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good idea. He's actually providing treatment, whereas medication-assisted treatment, the medication is not the treatment, and right. He seems to have a good grasp of that. I'm very, very impressed.
I'm glad to say that.
I'm not crazy about calling addiction a mental illness. It's kind of misleading. Mm-hmm. He jumped from. You were asking some examples of this addictive personality, and he started listing bipolar and schizophrenia. It's probably convenient to draw a line there and not necessarily mesh or join addiction with mental illness. It goes off the wrong direction too often, as he did, jumping into schizophrenia and bipolar diseases. And I can't go along with calling this a personality disorder. It's not a personality disorder. Mm-hmm. So it is not an addictive personality. When you do that, again, you're sort of suggesting this is pretty easy to take care of. It's just a personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I know he's not meaning to say that, but that's what kind of comes down to.
Yeah. So the topic this morning, Dr. Aldis, is words matter. Stop the stigma. And so this is a very helpful conversation. Wendell Smith and Dr. Aldis, I believe you two know each other, right? You know Wendell?
Dr. Aldis. Yes. I don't know if I can say it on the air. We've met, Dr. Aldis.
Yeah, you can say it.
Okay. I don't remember, but that's probably me being too old and forgetting things. But I just wanted you to know how impressed I was, the good grasp you had on addiction and the fact that medication-assisted treatment, the treatment is not the medication. And the things you're describing that you do there are definitely the treatment, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you need the medication to assist that to work well.
Okay. Okay, so Dr. Aldis, let me bring you up to speed with, I believe, where you know Wendell Smith. From the transitional training, and he's in cooperation with the Center, Inc.
Okay.
And so we can kind of put linked stuff together and figure out where we know one another from. And so I work with Wendell on the radio WRNR, the Red Hot Couch, with Ms. Joseph Watkins, and also so there's some other folk that I'll leave nameless so that we can, because I'm impressed as well with the way things are turning out, and I'm so happy that you're impressed, Dr. Aldis, because Berkeley and Jefferson County and indeed the whole United States needs to be on one accord, in my opinion. How do you feel about that, Wendell?
Yes. I was just, I thank you, Dr. Aldis. You were, again, you're on point as far as saying that we veered off a little bit. And I thank you for helping us come back to point that people, some people have addictive personalities that are apart from mental health issues. You're very correct. Thank you.
Okay, good.
So
kind of a minor point. And is it a mental illness or not? Is in fact a big debate. Mm-hmm. I've read lots of very impassioned discussions on that subject. So it's more of a soft suggestion that calling it a mental illness doesn't help us any, and it does lead us down, stigma-wise, a different path. And so since it could do some harm and doesn't do any good, maybe just use other phrases.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind addictive personality, by the way, but I would suggest that somebody can have an addiction without having an addictive personality, or somebody could have an addictive personality and not have an addiction, an right. actual addiction.
Yeah.
So again, equating the two would be a problem. I like to call addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I find that the
simple
best way to deal with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and call medication. Yeah, so mm-hmm. if we start adding things to the mix, it changes the whole flavor of what it is that we're trying to do and what we're using, because it leads people down the wrong way. And I yeah. think that so much misinformation is really, really dangerous because it takes us so long to get back. And one of the things that I like to offer is the opportunity for both of you guys to come together along with the Recovery Radio. And we do this kind of conversations often and invite other people in. And we're going to try and get things to where we can have, multiple conversations in a way that's structured so they won't get tangled up and people won't know who is who and what information is coming from whom. And get this thing done. You have some really, really important and encouraging questions here and points, Dr. Aldous. And I'd like to mm-hmm. get Mr. Smith's feedback, and then yours as well, on air. One question is, should we encourage graduates from the Recovery Coach program? First of all, do both of you are familiar with the Recovery Coach Academy? What about you, Wendell? You familiar?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And Dr. Aldous, I'm sure you are, because you were a presenter last week down at the association meeting.
That's right.
So that we should encourage Recovery Coach program to follow the patient starting before they are discharged from the hospital. Now, that's a big one. How do you think that can happen, Dr. Aldous?
Well, it can happen because it's done in many, many, many places.
Mm-hmm.
It's done in many, many progressive places. I won't say any further down that line.
Mm-hmm.
But when the person leaves the hospital many, many times after an overdose, the many, many times that day, they're back one or more, often more times again for overdosing again. It's a very dangerous time for somebody in addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So they also are open to some suggestions. They realize that they pretty well screwed up and they overdosed and almost died. And you might have their attention at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the time to get the most done. Okay. And, you can also relate to these people that once they leave the hospital, they may not like the hospital because what the hospital did to them, that it's put them in withdrawal, but the recovery coach knows what's going on. The mm-hmm. recovery coach hopefully will have access to some forms of treatment, some forms of stabilization anyway, and hopefully eventually get them into treatment.
And,
so
mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
is a...
Mm-hmm. And hopefully and
done.
Usually
this
there's family
is
there.
Important.
There's family there, and you get a chance to engage with the family. So, Wendell, so we just
yeah.
overdosed. We just overdosed, and this is for you, pertaining to the same question that I just read about the encouraging recovery coach. So recovery coach has just referred a client to you, and how would you proceed if we can get that client to your office?
Well, first of all, I think that it goes further back than that. I think when the person goes into the hospital, I believe the recovery coach or the social worker at the hospital somewhere should reach out to us so that we can begin the recovery process before they leave the hospital. By the time they leave the hospital, their mindset is in a different place versus being in a hospital And we come in and we talk to them while they're there. We bridge a gap between them and their family, if there is family, helping that process between them and the neighborhood, helping that process, because it takes an entire network of people to be involved in this person's life and recovery to help the recovery become complete. What happens so often with psychotherapy, what we do we isolate the person like they're the problem. You're the problem in the family. You're the problem in the community. And that isolation idea, that isolationist theory, doesn't work very well. It has not been effective. So when we look at it from an inclusive point of view, the family has a responsibility, the community has a responsibility, and of course, the client himself or herself has a responsibility. But we work in conjunction. The client knows I have a team with me. I have someone that I can talk to. I have, the community is not going to ostracize me. You know, when we find out Mr. Boyd and Dr. Aldridge that somebody is dealing with an addiction, as it were, or a drug, or domestic violence, or whatever case may be, they're stigmatized. And with that stigma comes shame, embarrassment, and they're dealing with all of that, and that can be overwhelming again. So actually what happens, we re-traumatize, we re-victimize the person versus being inclusive. The home is better situated to give support. The community, the neighbors. You know, neighbors, sometimes people in the community don't know how to talk to somebody in recovery. Words do hurt. First thing they say, you know, they attack them. So I'm talking about a total educational process, Mr. Boyd, to give support to the person before they leave the hospital. So when they leave the hospital, they know that there's a network or a safety net. I'm not saying enable. I am saying encourage.
And so, Dr. Aldis, you want to respond to that, what you just heard?
Sure. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you're waiting at the door when the ambulance comes in after the OD. Of course, you don't know when that person's going to show up in the hospital. But
right,
in an ideal world, I would like at some point when the physician has been able to focus on the patient doing what they could in the hospital, hopefully somewhere down the line, recovery coaches will be such an important part of our community that doctor will want to call you and say, hey, could you send someone over here? I'm ready to discharge this guy. I need some help.
Yes, yes, that's it. Dr. Aldis, you hit the nail right on the head.
Well, you know, so and we got a lot of nails that need hitting.
That's being done all over the country.
Yeah.
That's being done.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, one of the things that I find that we can encourage people to do is to read. You know, I find that... I send out stuff and I make it a point because, you know, people would send me things months ago and I wouldn't read it completely. But I'm finding now, especially with my friend, Dr. Aldis, he sends me stuff and I need to read it because at some point he's going to talk about it again if I come across his path. The only way I can get around that, doc, is to avoid you. And I don't plan on doing that because I like your style. And you too, Wendell, I think that you know, this is kind of a corporate prayer type of situation. We're putting things together in unity. So the next question, and this is one that I really like, Dr. Aldis, I'm glad you're thinking of me. It says, assure recovery coaches are compensated at a level similar to other states where the program is running successfully. So we're here in the Eastern Panhandle. Dr. Aldis, you want to take that one? What made you come up with that one? Because it's a good one.
Well, the reimbursement for peer recovery, recovery coach services has been in the debate in the state capital by DHHR and Medicaid, et cetera, for quite a long while. It's a very active discussion. One of the things we're cursed with living here is something called the Eastern Panhandle. We're squeezed between Virginia and Maryland. And often, a professional service, teachers, social workers, salaries may be better 3 miles away across the river. You know, so why wouldn't a well-trained, competent competent professional drive 3 miles away and get a better salary, because that's what we're dealing with here. So the way to make sure that we keep the recovery coaches here is to make sure that their salary is commensurate with what's going on right across the border, our two borders, Virginia and Maryland, and then you could add some other states too.
Yeah, gas money. But the Recovery Coach Academy is working on that as we speak. We have people in the field that's going to classes and being certified to certify recovery coaches and others who are going to be joining the team as we, you know, just attack and hopefully just annihilate this whole antiquated process that we're using that's been failing for years and years and years. Okay, the other one that I like is to boost reimbursement rates to addiction treatment providers. So both of you guys weigh in on that one. What's the process like for you, Wendell, to get compensated or reimbursed through Medicaid and Medicare and what other insurance?
The process is not so much long as much as they have a system. Mm-hmm. And the system is in place. And now the process of getting credentialed, as it were, and first of all, you would have to get what recovery coaches do recognized as a billable service.
I was asking about your service. How difficult has it been for you?
It hasn't been difficult. Mm-hmm. It has not been difficult. It has been long. Mm-hmm. You know, it has been long, but it's not difficult. Mm-hmm. It's just to get involved in the process. And, you know, Medicaid has trainings every year for how to become a part and what's billable and what's not billable. So it's doable.
Okay. And so, Dr. Aldis, you want to respond?
Well, yeah. I might rephrase that point. On my list, I'm talking about physicians, and now it can be nurse practitioners and PAs, people who are providing medication-assisted treatment. That is the medication part of medication-assisted treatment. It's so complex. All the reimbursement issues and the credential issues and the licensing issues, it's quite complex. People wonder why we don't have more doctors doing this. And my goodness, it's just a lot of reasons. One of them is it's very difficult for a doctor to make enough money to keep a practice open doing just addiction medicine if he wants to do well and do it properly and get the counseling done and get the real treatment involved. It's expensive to do that. And the reimbursement maybe won't cover those expenses mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. So it's easier in a large facility, which is getting outside state and federal funding, but it's pretty difficult sometimes mm-hmm. for the private practice doctor to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how that would be fixed, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not enough into this whole subject of reimbursement.
Yeah,
but mm-hmm. if you want to know why doctors aren't doing it, that is one major reason.
Yeah.
And so compensating these people at an equitable level compared to other places where it's working better, it's still a good point, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think in North Korea, the people in North Korea, I hate to make this comparison, they're kept in the dark about it. I mean, they're living in the dark ages, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think that here in the Eastern Panhandle, like you said, we're squeezed, it seems, in our ears, are closed off because of the leadership, in my opinion, you know, the way they're approaching, you know, this epidemic. So the other question
that's the point of my list, of course, and maybe I could explain the list better.
Yeah.
This is a draft copy list. Mm-hmm. This is not ready to go to be published completely yet.
Yeah, yeah.
What I did was I was asked by somebody I respect very much in working tangentially with addiction. Could I come up with four or five things that the state or the federal government, the state asking the federal government for assistance, what are the top four or five? So I started a list, and boy, it got bigger than five all of a sudden, a whole lot bigger than five. So I said, wait a minute, this is my list. Why don't I broaden this out to a bunch of other people, mm-hmm. note who they are, note what they do, note their job in this whole situation, and then give the top five for each of those groups, the top five in the physician group, the top five in the peer counseling group, all the other groups, get the top five for each of those groups and see how much difference we have between those groups. I think it could be significant.
Man,
and
that is a great bridge.
Those lists.
Wow.
To the state or federal or whomever it is that's interested in reading it.
That is a great bridge. How do you feel about that bridge, Wendell, that we just listened to?
Well, I think it's extremely interesting. I think it's extremely interesting.
Yeah,
we will leave that right there.
Yeah, man. I was just on first base, and he pushed me around to second. Okay, I'm trying to bring it home. Let's go to the next one. Consider encouraging the establishment of an addiction and recovery treatment services, ARTS, ARTS, program, similar to the program in Virginia in order to reduce OD cases in the hospital emergency departments. And he has the references below. Encouraging the establishment. We have many, many establishments, I guess, around the Eastern Panhandle. Dr. Aldous, can you elaborate a little on that one?
Let me not do that right now.
Okay.
That is getting underway in Winchester, rest mm-hmm, of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be successful, but there's no real data on it yet.
Okay.
It looks like a good. What it does is it's a comprehensive, very broad approach to addiction. It's not just one component or another. It's tying all the components together, which sounds fantastic, but it also sounds very challenging. I don't want to talk too much in mm-hmm. detail about it because that article I found does it fairly well. And I'd like to learn a little bit more about it before I promote it too strongly.
Yeah, and that's transparency. I think we can use that, that kind of spirit and conversation across this country, Dr. Aldous. I really appreciate you saying that because it implies to me that there's humility and consideration involved in this list. And I'd like to, Wendell, do you have anything else to add? We got about 3 minutes before we go off air. Tell us about.
No,
go ahead, Wendell.
I think the reality of recovery,
mm-hmm.
recovery from all forms of addictions, trauma, and life changing events is what's needed and necessary. And the hope is that people will learn to utilize the resources that are available. One thing we do know that issues and trauma and mental illness will not go away on its own. And the longer it persists, the harder it is to treat.
Okay. Sounds like they said time heals all wounds. I think that time just gives them an opportunity to fester. It's like an abscess.
Yeah, they do, Mr. Boyd. Yeah, they do.
It's like an abscess.
But, James, it also gives the ability to deal with it, too.
To deal
to
with
fix it.
Yeah, to fix it. That's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Dr. Aldous. I like that balance in you. You sound like I got a really good spiritual leader, and every time I go to him and I say something that sounds okay to me, he gives me another look at it. So I appreciate that about you. I really do, because that's how we grow and that's how we learn.
James, I'm going to have to cut out. I know you're about ready to close the hour mm-hmm. down, and I'm going to have to. I've got something that hit me right mm-hmm. now, so I got to go.
Okay,
away right now.
Dr. Aldous, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Aldous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Wendell. I really appreciate these kind of discussions. Sometimes I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. But if other people are listening in the background, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit. Hey, thanks a lot, Dr. Aldous, and I'll see you on the battlefield.
All right. All right. You're closing down?
No, I want to ask you one other question. Okay. No, we got to cut it out, Wendell. But so what? I'm going to text you this question later on after the show. But I appreciate you calling in. You have a great day, man. Okay.
All right. God bless, guys.
All right. Thank you. And thank my audience, thank everybody for listening in. We're going to close out with a little bit of Marvin Gaye. What's going on? Yeah, my man Marvin. I think I'm going to try to play play Marvin Gaye when they do his movie. And you'll see me on the big screen one day. Here we go.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Brother, like, solid, right on.
Hey, man, what's your name?
brother, brother, brother. There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today.
Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see,
sister,
oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Oh, but who are they to judge us simply 'cause our hearts.